The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
All right, good morning. Welcome to Tony Curry Radio. Look what the cat drug in this morning, man. Man, I'm kind of in bizarro world right now. I'm not sure what's going on. It's mornings. It's not late night, Saturday night. Got a friend of ours in here that we've known for nearly 30 years. Yeah. He was my urologist. Now he's a politician, but he is still my urologist because I saw him a couple weeks ago. But here's a politician. He's telling me there's things we can't talk about. There's things I want to talk about. I mean, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do this morning. And I'll say this. Brian Christine, of course, who's a candidate for the Alabama State Senate District 15 in the studio. Welcome in.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for so much. And I know that, and I was driving up and down 280, so I saw all of your big red signs, which I absolutely love. And I've gotten a couple of campaign things in my mailbox asking for cash, which you're not going to get any of because you know I'm broke. But I will give you all the airtime you need. And it was interesting because I was talking about this yesterday on Facebook Live and on Tony Curry Radio. I got blown up because politics is what happens in this state. This is probably the reddest state, I would think, or close to the reddest state in the entire country. Yeah, and so you're pretty safe talking any Republican stuff in this state. And Mayor Maddox, who's a very good friend of mine, he knows that as a Democrat, he tried to run and it didn't particularly, and he's a great guy. I love him. He's a good friend. First and foremost, you are a great friend and you're welcome here anytime. And so some people are like, wait a minute, are you going to have a Republican on? What about the guys running? I said, chill out. First and foremost, he's a great friend of mine. He knows my family very, very well. My airtime is your airtime. And the fact that you are running for state Senate, I'm happy to be here and a proud supporter of yours. So welcome in this morning.
No, I'm glad to be here. It's good to be back with you guys. How long has it been since we've actually done something together in a studio?
3 years?
Four years. Yeah, 4 years.
That's too long.
Every Saturday night on Talk 99.5, we did a little show called The Web. And obviously you were there as a urologist and you still do that. My first question this morning. What is one characteristic that is most common in both the science of urology and politics?
That is a great, and I tell you, no one has asked that question.
I've been waiting to drop that question for three weeks.
He has these. I think I almost feel like, I don't know if he comes up with them or he's just had them for years. And now here you go.
Yeah, exactly.
And now the psychologist, and I'm watching. I'm observing.
He's opening the door and he's letting the questions come out.
There you go.
So that is I love the question because, you know, this morning I was actually addressing the Mountain Brook City Council Executive Committee because they wanted to hear from the candidates. And one of the things I told them, I said, I am not a politician. I've never run for elected office before. I'm a surgeon. Mm-hmm. I'm a urologist, and I went to medical school at Emory. Came here 30 years ago this summer to the University of Alabama here at Birmingham for my residency training, and then I stayed. So I'm not a politician, I'm a surgeon. And I kind of look at the world through a surgeon's eyes, which means when I see a problem, then I want to fix it.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. When I see something that's bad or wrong or harmful, I want to cut it out and get rid of it. And so when I look at our state right now, we have a great state, but there's no reason that the state needs to be, 52nd in education? Needs to be 45th or 46th in healthcare, 30th in maternal healthcare. You know, we got to do something different. Whatever we're doing currently is not working well. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and I think there's broad agreement on that when I talk to people, because I encounter people of every political stripe. As I'm out there knocking on doors and meeting people in the district, I encounter, you know, a lot of people who consider themselves conservative, encounter a number of people who consider themselves more progressive. But the unifying factor there would be whatever we're doing is not working well in the state. And so what's the qualities of a urologist and a politician? So not being a politician, what I would say is what kind of the overlap is that I want to actually get in and do something. When I see a problem as a surgeon, I want to fix it and cut out what's wrong. And there's a lot wrong that's in Montgomery. And I want to get in and try to do something different and cut out what's wrong.
So is that why you decided to get into politics? I quite frankly, you're a public servant. I don't know too many people that want to become part of the armed forces. They don't want to become police officers, firefighters, and public servants. But is that why you wanted to get into politics? Because you obviously, you're known around the world for what you do in the science of urology. And you're at Urology Centers of Alabama and you do incredible work. So this is not something you have to do. Is that why you wanted to get into it?
Yeah, I can promise you, I ain't doing it for the money. I ain't doing it for the fame or for the recognition. I'm doing it just because our state needs help. I mean, our state definitely needs help. And listen, I am fiscally, socially a more conservative guy. I'm a pretty conservative individual. But I realize that one of the things that we don't have happening in Montgomery is individuals actually trying to find some common ground to move some things forward. I mean, I have my compass that guides me, right? Mm-hmm. And just like people who have a different political philosophy than me have their compass that guides them. And there's going to be areas where we're not going to agree. But I think if you've got the will and you want to try to find some common ground, you want to find where those lines intersect to move the state forward, you can do it. You just got to have the will to do it. And there's just not the will. There's not the leadership in the legislature in Montgomery to do that, which is not to say there's not some good people, but there's a lot of cats down there who what they want to do, these men and women, they just want to keep doing what they're doing. They don't want outsiders involved. They just think about the next election when they're down there.
Alabama State Senate District 15, he's a candidate. Voting day is coming up here in a couple of days. And, of course, is Brian Christine, a good friend of ours here in Curry and Claypo Show. We've had him on numerous times. Are you finding, I'll get Josh, I know you got a ton of questions you want to get to too. Are as a regular Joe, and this is perfect because I think Josh and I, he's a little bit more left than I am, and he lived out in California. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, traditionally a Republican state, and so I get down here and it makes me scratch my eyeballs out every single time I see a Republican television commercial. I am a conservative, but I see this and I'm like, it just feels like everyone will do anything and say anything just to get the vote. And then when they get in, they back off a little bit. How do you deal with that? Because I know you're Catholic. I know you're conservative. I know how you feel about abortion. I know a lot of things about you. But when you see that, and you know it works to an extent, because that's what, I mean, we do commercials about stating something. Someone calls you a liar, you come out, and then you state they're a liar, and it goes back and forth. And it's just, as a voter, it's just like, why are we wasting so much time and money on these things? We really just never get to the issues. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I think it's easy to give platitudes. It's easy, you know, if you're of a particular political stripe, and let's say conservative in this case, it's easy to say, well, you know what, if I run an ad where I'm shooting a gun or I'm holding a Bible or I'm, you know, patting a little kid on the head, then that's going to sell and going to get me votes. And I get it. That can work. And I guess if you're more progressive, then you can run a commercial where you're saying I stand up for LGBTQ rights, or I, you know, whatever that may be for more progressives. And I get the power of those in commercials, but I think, or advertising, but I think what people really want, I think people really want men and women who want to serve, who have their convictions, who have their compass, and who aren't afraid to say what it is and to say, listen, this is what I believe, this is what I feel, this is what I think is right, this is what I think is wrong. But let's actually try to have a conversation. Let's actually try to get together and try to find that common ground. Because, you know, there's going to be things that you and I agree on, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be things that Josh and I agree on, but there are things that Josh and I won't agree on. But what we have the ability to do is for someone like Josh and I to sit there and say, okay, we're going to be respectful to each other. We're not going to cede our ground, but what we're going to do is be respectful and try to find where we can actually find some things to work together. Because if you would disagree on 5% of some of things, yeah, but you agree on 95% of something, well, let's take the 95% and run forward with that for the betterment of the state and the better, you know, just to make our state better. Because it is an incredible state. We have a great state.
Yeah.
There is no reason that we should be, you know, 49th or 50th in so many things, and we should be the butt of people's jokes. And, you know, and now, you know, now people say, well, if you're in Mississippi, you say, thank God for Alabama. Right. Yeah. I mean, there's just no, our state doesn't need that. We have great health care in this state. We have great technology. We have great science. And yet in areas of the state, we don't have great health care and we don't have access to great science. And so we just got to do better. And so, yeah, you can make the commercials to appeal to people, and I get it. But I think a better appeal to people is to say, okay, here's what I believe, here's what I stand for, now let's try to find a way to make things better.
Right.
Do you think people are ready for that? I mean, I agree with you completely. But I almost, to your point, it feels easier to get people on board by speaking to the 5% that isn't, or I'm sorry, speaking to the most intense topics that are easy to get people along and really not address the other part. I mean, so does it, you're not running commercials like that. You're not running the shooting guns, holding right, Bibles and shooting guns and that kind of stuff. Are we ready to have that kind of, we don't agree, but conversation? And based on what you've, based on your experiences now that you've been out there and talking with people, et cetera, are we ready for that?
Yeah, I mean, no, I believe they are. That's what I believe. That's what I see as I'm out there. And you know, do I like shooting guns? Am I a Second Amendment right guy? I am 100%. You know, do I read the Bible? Do I like sacred scripture? Do I go to church? Go to mass? Yeah, absolutely. And those things are important. But that's not really what we focused on so much in our campaign. Not that I don't have those values and those beliefs, but what we focused on more in the campaign is that what we want is change in Montgomery. What we want are men and women to get in this case, me, get in to serve, to try to be really responsive to the people. Because one of the things that really got me interested in this race, one of the things that really motivated me to move forward, was when I began to talk to people out in this district, when I began to meet individuals, and so many people said, and of course, did we do polling initially? To think, yeah, we did. We don't do a lot of that because it's expensive, but we did initial polling, and we find out that over 70% of the men and women in this district have no idea who their current state senator is.
Wow, that's interesting.
Over 70% have no idea who their senator is, because I believe that state government is local government, and what that means is the legislator needs to have a relationship with the men and women and kids in the district. And what does that mean? It means you got to get out. You got to meet men and women. You got to talk to them and find out what's important to them. You've got to actually have a relationship with those people and make an effort to do it. And that has not been happening the last 3.5 years in this district. And that's really motivating to me. So a lot of our campaign is to say, listen, if you want someone who's going to make an effort to know you, to really try to be your voice and to find out what's important, then vote for Brian Christine. You know, one of the things, one of our Facebook and YouTube ads that's been incredible and now on TV popular is me standing in front of a scrub sink, scrubbing my hands and saying, you know, Alabama politics is really dirty, but you know, together we can get to Montgomery and clean it up, which has nothing to do with faith and guns and these things that are important and that I do believe in. But what it really taps into, I think more, is that Alabama politics really is dirty. I mean, politicians in Montgomery, people who are politicians, what they care more about is staying as politicians in Montgomery. All right. And I think people, that resonates with people. I think people just want, people want average men and women to get in and serve and give some time. I am a strict believer in term limits. I think term limits are a must. We should have that at all levels of our government. And I think what people want and what I want are to make an opportunity for men and women to get involved in this process, if they choose to run for office, if they get elected to serve for over a limited time, get out, make room for someone else, and not simply be a politician, a career politician.
Is there a feeling, Dr. Brian Christine joins us here, Alabama State Senate, District 15, he's a candidate. Is there a feeling that, this reminds me of the old Eddie Murphy movie, remember when he ran off the name alone, and next thing you know, he's going to change the world, and then he got in, and he eventually, yep, he kind of saw how things ran, what he needed to do, the deals behind the doors, and all the different things that politicians do in order to move things forward. That's part of the process, right? I mean, that's what politics are, yeah, right? Don't tell me that politics, politicians don't get paid under the table. Hey, listen, I gave you $50,000 last year. I need a favor. Those kind of things. We've certainly seen it at a local level. Hell, half our city council, I think, is either in prison or has been fired at some point in time for the last 20 years. Our governors are no better. But I mean, where do you deal with that from a conscionable standpoint? Just from like, okay, I have my conscience. I know you're a good guy. You're a good Catholic. And you have a great heart. But when you start seeing the dirty dealings, how do you feel like you're going to deal with that?
Well, I think you just got to deal with it. I mean, just try to use your internal moral compass and integrity compass and try to make sure that you keep those points aligned and you move forward. I think obviously you have to give to get in terms of doing things in life. In other words, you have to be able to not make a deal, but be able to say, okay, this is a really important initiative for me and for the state. How can we work together to do this? And this is important to you, your initiative, other senator, or whatever the case is. Again, how can we work together to move things forward? But try to do it with integrity and try to do it without the underhanded kind of dealings that go on. I mean, you mentioned money and you know, 50,000 here. So if one of the things that's a real barrier for men and women to get involved and to run for office, and again, I'm learning this because I've never run for office before, but I learned this. One of the real barriers can be that it's very expensive to run a campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. Even at the state level, it's a very expensive thing. Incumbents have access to ridiculous amounts of money in Montgomery from lobbyists and special interest in PACs. And so the campaign that we're running, I mean, my wife and I, Helen and I, are really self-financing this campaign. Yes, we've gotten donations from friends and family who have been very generous. But, you know, 90% plus is really coming from us. And I don't say that to pat myself on the back. I say it because I've been very blessed in my career, and we have resources we can do that. When you look at my competitor, for instance, and this is all public record because it's out there. You can look on the Secretary of State's website. It's all in the public domain. If you look at last June in his campaign fund, he had right about $90,000. If you look at the end of December, that had gone up to right at $500,000. And if you look at where these donations came from, very, very, very few came from anybody in the district. The vast majority, $450,000 plus, came from PACs and special interest in Montgomery.
Wow.
So,
I don't mean to cut you off, Josh. No, I apologize.
No.
So what does that mean? They ain't giving him money, or any politician money, because they're nice.
Yeah.
They're giving him money because they, they want you on the hook, and they want something from you. So the very fact that Helena, and Helena's my wife, the very fact that we have self-financed this campaign, we have not taken any money from any PACs or special interest, haven't done that, haven't solicited that. I'm not going to be on the hook for that stuff. But I can tell you, if you've received $400,000, $450,000 worth of PAC money and special interest money and lobbyist money, you're on the hook, brother. They want something from you, and they will get something from you.
So let me follow up on Tony's question, because this is an interesting piece about, if you will, playing the game, but playing it fairly. So it is easy to say, you know, I'm an outsider, I'm not going to do it this way, it's dirty, but kind of to play off his, you're going to get in there, hopefully, and there are rules, and you know, there are rules, and there are fouls, and there are things, and maybe they don't run. I was, as you were speaking, I was trying to think of, okay, how does this work as a physician? And it didn't work in my head, so I moved that over to the side. But how do you play in a world that is about negotiations and is about, hey, if you do this for me, I'll do this, and maybe even, you know, hey, look, if we can get this funded, so again, nothing illegal. Maybe even nothing that pushes completely against your moral compass, but you are sort of, things are kind of dirty sometimes. How do you play that and then still do this in a way that is right and good?
Yeah, I think what you have to do is be able to say, I'm going to engage in this. I'm going to play this game. I'm going to engage in this by doing what is right and good. So what someone said to me, at a campaign event we had, kind of a meet and greet where people get together, meet the candidate. Someone said, and they said this, they said, Brian, are you willing, if you win this election, are you willing to go to Montgomery and be willing to lose the next election because you don't play the game? So let me just say it here, and I'm going to say it now because I said it then. When I go to Montgomery, I am not going to be worried about the next election. Am I willing to go down? Am I willing to lose the next election because trying not to play that game? Answer is yes. Okay, so the answer is yes, because I think that's what you have to do. You have to get down there, and I'm sure it's the same if you're going to Washington, but you have to get down to Montgomery and say, okay, here's the agenda I have. Here's what my constituents want. Here's what the men and women, it's important to them in this district and in the state. These are the things that we're going to try to focus on. And if you can work with individuals, you know, individuals, other legislators and the governor to advance something that's good and right and just for Alabama, then we do it. Right. But not to do it by doing things that are, and you're right, not illegal, but even you're going to push the moral compass, because if it's your moral compass or your political compass, then you just got to hold to those points. Right. So, but you have to be willing to lose to win. Does that make any sense?
No, it does. Yeah.
And I tell you, I really, really, now people have told me, they said, Brian, because you're running against an incumbent, so the story of this district is this: our state senator for two terms was a guy named Slade Blackwell.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so I've known Slade and I used to do triathlons together, we used to train together. His wife is a general surgeon at St. Vincent's, a tremendously talented surgeon at St. Vincent's, Sally Salter Blackwell. So I've known them for a long while, right? And when Slade decided not to run again, which was the last election cycle, the kids were getting older. He and Sally said, you know what? He's put a ton of time into this for two terms, done a really good job, not going to run again. That he decided that pretty late in the process. And so the bottom line is that the Republican Party didn't have a candidate. And so one of the state House members said, well, I got a friend of mine who's never run, and maybe we can get him in the seat. So they went and talked to this fella, who's our current senator, and literally the day or two before you had to get someone on the ballot. And they said, would you like to be a state senator? You won't have to run. You won't have any Republican opposition. You will not run. And he said, Sure. I was cutting his grass or something. Yeah. I mean, literally. Sure. So he stepped in. Did he have a Republican challenger? No. Did he have to run for that office? No. Now, there was an election, and as I remember, there was a Democratic candidate, but he wasn't running for it. He just stepped in. And so he stepped into this position, didn't really have to run, okay? This is a different situation now. Mm-hmm. This is where you now have an incumbent who's being challenged. And so an incumbent hasn't been challenged in this district for, I want to say, 12 years now.
Wow.
Okay, because and the point I'm making is this. The party likes to keep incumbents. And I'm sure. I suspect this is true on the Democratic side as well. I'm speaking from the Republican Party. I'm sure it's true both sides. They like incumbents who they feel are safe and solid and controllable. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what they want. So they don't want outsiders involved. I'm telling you, Montgomery does not want your average Joe and Jane outsiders involved. And so when you step into a race like this, what you begin to really see is the underbelly, the dirty underbelly of politics, where the party actively tries to keep you out of the race, where they really discourage you in aggressive ways to try to keep you out of the race, where they do things and say, you know what, we're going to try to make this. And this was the word from the sitting senator, I was told. You tell Christine I'm going to make this the most expensive race in Alabama Senate history and just bury him. He can't raise the money he needs. Well, it's not all about money. And so they tried to intimidate me out of this race, right? That can intimidate me.
No.
That just made me, that ain't going to happen. They don't know Christine very well. That just made me want to run more. And so I think that kind of thing that happens, that kind of corruption, I would say, is another reason I think term limits are really important. Another reason that we need new and different and outside blood. I mean, we need men and women who have other life experiences to get involved and serve and then get out and then make room for someone else.
It's not all about the money, and it's about being likable. There's this gal named Kay Ivey that knows that. She's liked by 75% of the people that live in this state, but a lot of people don't think she can be the governor that takes us to the next level. But she's a very likable person. She's Maymaw. I mean, she is. She's grandma, and we love her. I mean, right. And when she's shooting a gun, that's pretty cool. I'm going to use a classic rock analogy here. Brian Christine joins us here, Alabama State Senate District 15. He's a candidate for that, and first and foremost, a great friend of both Dr. Josh and I, and we love having you in the studio. You got a rock and roll band that is willing to go out, shake hands, play the smallest venues all over the place for 16, 17 years until they finally get their first hit record. And next thing you know, they get really huge and you can't get within 100 miles of the stage. And they act like they don't know who their little friends are. Saw Taylor Hicks last Saturday. Guy is so humble, has never changed. He won American Idol 17 years ago and just went out in the crowd and talked to people and everything else. You got to do that. You got to be a likable guy. A lot of people will vote. There's a lot of fence sitters out there, regardless of whether you're Republican or Democrat. You got to be a likable guy. And if you're a likable guy, you're going to get votes. Tina just sent me a question through Facebook. She's like, how does he find the time? Because if you got to be the Theodore Roosevelt special is coming up on History Channel this weekend for Memorial Day weekend.
He watches.
He set the record for shaking, like, I don't know, it's like 30 something thousand
it
hands.
Was
yeah.
I guess it was after he was, I think it was his first election when he was greeting folks at the White House for the first time.
People just wanted to touch the guy. And if they touched him, he was getting the vote. Even if they were their other party, they decided, I couldn't believe I just met the, how do you find time? You're a urologist. You're working a full-time gig. You have a wife. Tina wants to go work. She goes, so if I vote for him, how am I going to know he's going to have the time? Yeah, is this a hobby? Is this something on the side?
No.
And is this one of those things where you're kind of throwing it out there and you can ask Tommy Tuberville. He did the same thing. He did a platform, tried to check some things out, spent a couple $100,000 to find out if he could win, and he did. Now it's all of a sudden a different career. We know him as much as a politician, probably as a coach. But where are you going to find the time to do that? And if people vote for you, how do they know they've got you?
No, that is, and I'm glad Tina asked that question because that's a real question. And so when I first started thinking about getting into this race, again, about a year and a half ago, I really started talking to my family and I decided I don't like the direction the country and the state are taking. I certainly don't like the direction the country is taking. I'm worried about our state. And I said, I really want to make a difference. I really want to try to make a difference and become involved. Because if you sit on the sidelines and you complain, but you're not willing to get in there and put your skin in the game, that's a problem. So I started talking to my wife, Helena. My younger brother is a former U.S. attorney in Georgia. He's a district attorney, Bobby Christine. My older brother is a judge in Florida, Alexander Christine. My sister was a special ed teacher. So kind of service people. So we already started talking about this as a family, started talking about it. And I know it sounds corny to say we prayed about it. Well, obviously I did, my wife and I. And so I said, you know, I'm really thinking about looking at maybe even running for the U.S. Congress. And my siblings said, Think about state level involvement and state level representation, because that's really important. And certainly in the last couple of years, we see that state legislatures can have tremendous influence on our day-to-day life and importance. And so they said, why don't you think about state level? Because you can really make a difference at the local level. And that became appealing to me. So then I started to investigate, you know, the current situation in Senate District 15. And I realized there was a tremendous disconnect with the men and women who live here and the state senator who don't know him. He doesn't get out and do much. And I said, this is an opportunity for me to do something different. I'm a urologist. I'm a surgeon, like you said. So in terms of my practice, I've been with our group now about 24, 25 years. So I'm at the point in my career when I'm ready to slow down. I'm not ready to retire completely because I do like surgery. I do like helping people. I feel like I can offer service in the operating room. So I'm ready to slow that down. That fits with my timeline. So really, I've really cut back the practice. I've really cut back the practice to campaign, tremendously cut back. My partners are all on board with that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that means something to me in terms of, you know, what I can produce in the practice and the number of people I can see. But I'm at the point in my career when I'm willing to back down, because now I really want to give tremendous service to the state. So, Tina, you will not have to worry that this is going to be a, quote, part-time gig for me. I really am going to be dedicated to this. I'm going to bring that same energy and that same focus I've brought as a surgeon to taking care of patients, you know, to help and take care of the state. I am a big fan of Rudyard Kipling, the poet. Mm-hmm. And he had a poem called If. Mm-hmm. It's a very famous poem. But one of the lines is, if you can fill every minute with 60 seconds of distance run, the concept, that's what I'm really want to do with this job, with this devotion, with this service of the state legislature, to fill every minute with 60 seconds of distance run, to really put my energy and put my passion into it. So, Tina, you're not going to have a state senator who's sitting on the sidelines. You're not going to have a state senator who doesn't want to represent you. You're not going to have a state senator who you don't know. That's really important to me. And I'm going to give the time and effort it takes. I'm excited about this.
Alabama State Senate District 15. He is Brian Christine, first and foremost, a great friend of ours and just a good guy all around. And we've known him for years and years and years. And I'm so happy you came in. I'm assuming that you're coming to Tony Curry Radio because, you know, we're kind of the linchpin. We're the last big thing that you can be on. I know you've been on television. You've been on.
Yeah.
Let's save this Tony Curry Radio thing to the last minute, because I'm taking that as a compliment that you're waiting to use this last, because we're going to push you over the top. We're going to take credit for that.
I get a call last week. Tucker Carlson says, come on Thursday morning. I said, no, I'm going with Tony.
Damn straight. That's what I'm talking about. All right.
Gutfeld, no way. I'm here with you guys.
And by the way, we'll podcast this interview so you can listen to it on Spotify. Go to Spotify, search Tony Curry Radio. Our podcasts are just rocking. It's been unbelievable. And search Tony Curry Radio and you'll see our interview with Brian Christine, the video and the whole nine yards. And of course, we're on Facebook Live as well on Tony Curry Radio. All right. So you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Word association.
Word association. Okay.
Trump.
Trump.
You can't say Trump. You have to give me a different word.
Okay, let's start.
He's not okay. A good psychologist. You're not a very nice psychologist. Oh, okay. Why don't you try?
How does that make you feel?
Trump. Trump. Groundbreaker.
Okay. Let's talk about him for a minute.
Sure.
Because obviously I have never seen a politician who is 2 years removed from the office get more talk than the president himself. He obviously is incredibly polarizing. He did change the world, whether you like it or not, but he did change, and we changed the way we look at politics.
Right.
Outside killing somebody, pretty much could do whatever he wanted, and a lot of people dug that. And he's got just a groundswell, not even swelling, it's swollen. He's got a huge amount of P1s that would do anything for him. And I know that this state, over the last two elections, was the first state to actually win for him. Alabama has just voted, you know, we're seeing a win for Donald Trump in Alabama. We're always the first state. And so a lot of people use him. It drives me crazy when people will vote or use a product just because someone else tells them to do it. I want you to do your homework. Why are you wanting to vote for this individual? Not just because you're getting a Trump endorsement. And I think Republicans are finding themselves kind of being pulled, certainly with the insurrection and all the other things that were associated with him during his presidency, that it makes them a little uncomfortable. They know they need him, not so much as an endorsement, but it doesn't hurt to know that Donald Trump, because they're part of the Republican Party. This reminds me a little bit, if I don't mind going on a rant, of a Nick Saban Alabama thing. Alabama's always going to be Alabama. Nick Saban's certainly taken Alabama to an all different level. Now, they walk hand in hand and they're a perfect complement to each other. I'm not so sure I can say that about Donald Trump and the Republican Party, because if you're a Republican and you're supposed to toe the line and supposed to be strong and you're all supposed to be together, it's very difficult sometimes to deal with all the shit that he's throwing out in the 6 years that he's been in the public eye. So what do you do when people ask you about, do you like Donald Trump? Do you believe in Donald Trump? Would you like him to see you run for re-election in 2024 as a Republican in this state?
No, there is absolutely no question that Donald Trump just he went into the temple and he overturned the money changers table.
Yeah, I did.
He did. There is no question about that. I mean, this is an individual who successful in business, seemed to be very successful in business. Who came in, he obviously didn't need to go into politics, didn't need to become president for money. He didn't need to do that. Now, and I'm sure with his, if you're going to be president of the United States, I don't care who that president has been, you obviously must have a tremendously strong ego, I guess, and really believe in yourself and really be willing to look in the mirror and say, yeah, you know what, I'm right all the time. And so he obviously has those qualities to him. But I think what he really tapped into are people who felt really frustrated with both parties. I mean, that's part of what he tapped into. Because again, and I get that. I mean, Republican Party, Democratic Party, I think that, I mean, Josh, I suspect you are a registered Democrat or independent. Right. I'm sure there's things about the party that really disappoint you.
Yes.
I'm a registered Republican. There are things about the party that really disappoint me, even here in the state. Disappoint me, people who use the moniker as Republican, but they really aren't willing to fight and do the things that they say. They like to call themselves Republican, but they really don't embrace the ethos of conservatism that I do. And I suspect there are people who call themselves Democrat who don't embrace the ethos of maybe progressivism that maybe you, that Josh, that you like. And so I think he kind of tapped into part of that, which is, yeah, okay, I'm going to run as a Republican, but you know, I'm not your granddad's Republican. I'm something different. Now, whether you like that different or not, it's a whole different thing. I mean, that's a whole separate subject. But I think he tapped into that. And I think people like the fact that he would say, I mean, a lot of people didn't like the fact that he would say a lot of things that were upsetting, but a lot of people really that did resonate with them, that he would do that. Certainly, do I have Donald Trump's endorsement? Donald Trump doesn't care about this race. He's got bigger fish to fry than Brian Christine.
I don't know now.
Okay. He's got bigger fish to fry than Brian Christine. But what I find, again, being out in the district, being out heavily talking to people, is that you'll have individuals who really are strong Trump supporters and they really like the Trump agenda. You'll have individuals who are very much anti-Trump, but you have a lot of people who are like, we think that his policies were really good. We wish he would say things differently, but there's a lot of things we like about his policies.
Yes.
And that seems to be really, I mean, to be really popular in general. It's interesting how much sway he has. I get it. As a ex-president in a party, you're going to have a lot of sway, like Barack Obama or Bill Clinton or, you know, Bush. You're going to have a lot of sway. He continues to have a lot of sway, but he is polarizing. You're right about that. 100%.
Is moderate a bad term?
No, in this state it is.
I don't think moderate is a bad term, and I certainly don't describe myself as a moderate. I don't describe myself as a moderate. I don't think it's a bad term. Terms like moderate or whatever can be misleading, because if me, who I consider myself very conservative, but does that mean I wouldn't be willing to work with someone who is more progressive if what we can join together on is really right for the state and the people? Now, some might say, well, that would make you a moderate, Brian. I don't know. To me, that makes me someone who's willing to try to find some ways to make our state better. So I don't think moderate is a bad term. It doesn't describe me. I think it describes a lot of people. Who are whether you fall right or left of the political line, there's a lot of folks who would call themselves moderate. It doesn't really describe me, but because I don't feel that I'm a moderate doesn't mean that I'm not willing to try to find, again, those intersecting lines and common ground.
Well, what's amazing to me, Brian Christine joins us here. He's running for Alabama State Senate District 15, and we love having him on the show. And you can podcast this interview a little bit later on Spotify and certainly listen to it on Tony Curry Radio. We're live on Facebook right now. What's amazing to me is how everyone feels like you must be, it's black or white. And moderate is like, let's look at every situation. I'm a Catholic, and I can't be Catholic and be, you know, pro-abortion. I see the bumper stickers, but I'm like, in certain situations, I can certainly see where if you're raped or incest or some type of situation, and if God's almighty, then there's a reason for everything happening. And it just drives me crazy to see people find just a little edge, like I'm all for gun rights, but I don't believe we should have assault rifles or whatever it is. And all of a sudden, they're anti-gun. They don't want to let me shoot my assault rifle in my backyard. You know, and I'm like, guys, we can be, there's more middle ground. I think more of Americans are in that middle area where we look at each instance and we go, wait a minute, it doesn't have to be all black or white. There are some situations where, and you can use abortion, you can use gun rights, you can use LGBTQ, you can use whatever you want. Where transgender, should we allow, we've talked numerous times about, should transgender people be allowed to run, should a woman who is born a woman be able to run in a men's race? And I say no. It doesn't mean I don't like LGBTQ. It doesn't mean I'm anti-transgender. It's just like sometimes life ain't fair and it's difficult. But we're also talking about a very small portion of the United States of America that we're spending a lot of time talking about. So I think more people just need to be a little bit more compassionate. I do think we're more polarized, and I think Trump was a big part of that. I'm not saying it was good or bad. There were some good things he did and some bad things he did. But just your thoughts on that. I mean, as a politician, it's got to be difficult. You got to toe the party line. But at the same time, if you get caught saying the KIV commercial, she said that Donald Trump didn't win the election. They're using it against her. For God's sakes, can we stop already? I mean, give me a break. I mean, what? It's okay to speak your mind. And I think a lot of voters, including myself, want to see the real person. I don't want to hear you say this on Tuesday and this on Wednesday just because you're speaking to a different group. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does make sense.
And win and change the world, will you? Because it's driving me crazy, particularly in this state.
That's the plan. So, you know, like if Donald Trump is a Republican nominee in the next presidential election, if he gets a nomination of the party, I'm going to vote for him. There's no question about that. I presume that Joe Biden will run for president again. You would think maybe not, who knows, but we'll see what happens. But you know, again, I can tell you that I'm probably going to be voting, well, I'll be voting for Donald Trump, because my suspicion is whoever the candidate is for the Democratic Party is not going to line up enough with my values.
So if there's another Republican nominee, you're not saying they would line up particularly with your particular views? Democrat, and Donald Trump does, or
no, if there's a Democrat that you're lining up, you line, because this is a really interesting question.
Do you find that the majority of Republicans, not so much in this state, but across the country, want to vote Republican, but they would love to see a person run against Donald Trump for that Republican nomination that is at least a little softer and more presidential? Give me a different option.
No, I'm sure there are people who feel that way, and I've heard that. There are people who feel that, no, he does need to be the nominee. Listen, I personally think that competition is a very good thing.
Sure.
And so I think, and again, that's why part of the reason I'm in this race, I think competition is a good thing. If I win this seat and I am your senator, and in 4 years, I fully expect that there will be a primary and someone will challenge me. That is a very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to fight hard. Don't get me wrong. But that is not a bad thing to have competition. So if someone comes out and people talk about DeSantis, or people talk about, I don't know, Kristi Noem, or whoever it may be, or, you know, whoever it is, to challenge Donald Trump in the primary process, I think competition is a really good thing. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem at all. I think there are people who absolutely want to see Donald Trump run. There are people who say, listen, maybe, yes, policies were great, but a softer voice. We'd like to see a different Republican. I don't mind the competition aspect. I think that's a very good thing. Now, you were going to say.
I don't remember. We want a person that we can sit down and have a beer with. That's who we want. And then, you know, but people say, but hey, he's a physician. He's a surgeon. He's going to use all that fancy education and not understand me, and not understand sort of what most people want, because he's also used to making executive decisions. You know, I'm going to cut this out. And I hear that a lot. You know, this idea, it's almost like a fear of a incredibly educated person who has had a very different career. You're not going to be able to relate. Not because of Brian Christine, but because Brian Christine is a surgeon or a physician.
Yeah.
How do you address that?
No. So, you know, one of the things that, again, I told you I'm really passionate about is that I believe as a state senator, I need to really work to have a relationship and know the men and women who are out in District 15. Okay. I think that's really important, because as a physician, as a surgeon, I've got to have a relationship with patients. I've got to have a really good first name basis relationship with patients. We have to know each other well enough, and they have to trust me enough to talk about things that are very private matters as a urologist, and to, at times, a lot, to actually say, okay, I know you well enough. I like you well enough. You understand me. I am willing to let them put me to sleep and let you operate upon me. Sometimes that is life-saving operations. Sometimes not. Sometimes it's quality of life operations. But there are times when it's life-saving operations. people have to trust me enough to be able to do that. And part of that is kind of building that relationship, that Brian relationship with the patient, whatever their first name is. I don't have a problem doing that because I enjoy doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's going to be any problem with folks feeling that I can relate. There's going to be no problem with me relating to them. Now, I've got to let them understand that. And so, no, I mean, I'll talk to anybody anytime. You go to my campaign website, my cell phone is on there. I get calls from people all the time on this campaign. And a lot of the calls I'll get, the phone will go off. I'll say, hey, this is Brian. And they'll say, I just wanted to see if you'd really take my call. I can't believe there's someone who's running for office who will really take my call. So yeah, we do that. I talk to people all the time. You know, I think when I get, when I am elected, should people call me Senator? They can call me, I don't care what they call me. They can call me Brian. If they say, well, I'm just being respectful and calling you Senator Christine, that's great. Cause I appreciate that respect, but that's not, you know, it's not some, I certainly don't want to be unapproachable. I don't want to be someone you can't sit down and have a beer with or have a glass of tea with and sit down and talk, because again, that's what we're doing now. We're putting 60 seconds of distance run into every minute with me getting out and folks sitting down, talking to them and forming that relationship.
Brian Christine joins us here on Curry and Klepo. We do it every Thursday. Dr. Josh and myself do a show, and we usually talk about all kinds of different relationship things and stuff like that. Today we're talking a little bit, and this is first time we've had a politician in the Tony Curry Radio Studio, so welcome. So this
remember,
is, this,
I'm
this
not
is
a first. Politician. I'm just an incredibly likable, good-looking guy.
You're well, that. You're that for sure, and a urologist, but you're a politician today, and we love having you in here. He's running for the Alabama State
point.
Senate District 15. Yeah,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. That is a good point, though. This idea of I'm not a politician. You know, and you hear this a lot from people coming from the outside.
Well, a lot of people love Donald Trump. He wasn't a politician. Yeah, he's the first guy who won an election without being a politician.
But yes. But you're going into politics, and you will be a politician.
And I think when people say, and when I say I'm not a politician, and Josh, you know this because this was a great softball question. Thank you. I think what it means is it's you know, to use the term to say a politician, meaning you are an elected individual, right? But when people say I'm not a politician or I don't like politics, I think they mean all the creepiness and sliminess and backbenching and lies that go along with that. So that's what I really am not, and then I'm committed to not becoming for sure. You know, I go back to this having a presence in the district, and I go back to forming that relationship. And people, you know, because I believe that's so important to do that. Because to me, one of the things that's lacking certainly from this district right now is leadership qualities, because part of leadership is being able to have a relationship with the men and women who you represent and the men and women you work with in the legislature and the governor, to have a relationship to advance what's right and good for the state. So I think we're lacking leadership qualities now, and I certainly want to try to bring that to District 15. We talk about District 15. By the way, what is District
15? Where is District? Yeah, what is District 15?
So it includes Homewood and Vestavia on the eastern side of 31. So the 280 side of 31, okay? The 31's the cut point. It includes Mountain Brook. It includes Leeds. It includes a big part of Trustful. It goes down the 280 corridor, so it includes Liberty Park. It gets Inverness, Highland Lakes, Eagle Point, Greystone, Shoal Creek, Mount Laurel, Chelsea, Harpersville, and it does get a little bit into Talladega County. So geographically, it's pretty spread out. There are 35 state Senate districts in the state of Alabama. So it's not like, you know, in the U.S. Senate, each state has two U.S. senators. It's not like Alabama has two senators. There are 35 senators, one from each district, and that's District 15.
Did you know that when you started running?
I did.
Did you?
Oh, I did.
Well, look at you.
I did.
Okay. Another question I was going to ask.
And those lines do swing because, you know, when we do the census every 10 years, the lines have changed a bit differently because of, they call it reapportionment when you, you know, adjust the line. Some call it gerrymandering. Some call it.
What kind of homework did you have to do? I mean, you're a smart guy, and you thought about this before you threw your hat in, but what did you have to learn? You know, because you're talking a lot about meeting with people and understanding and relationships, and I think that's very important, and you have that as a physician. But I also know as a physician that there's a whole lot of specifics and knowledge that you had to learn. What did you need to learn about either the district or the state that, you know, I don't know, maybe you didn't have as much knowledge about?
Well, you know, so what did I do? The first thing I did was I approached our former state senator, Slade Blackwell, because, again, he's a friend. And I said, Slade, I'm thinking about this. What do you think? And he said, I think you would do an incredibly good job. He said, I think you'd bring qualities that we need to the district. So I talked to him about things. I then, you know, talked to some political consultants and said, hey, you know, this is going to run a campaign. What does it cost? What do we have to do? Gained some knowledge from that. Interviewed different people. Obviously talked a lot to the family, talked a lot to people in again, out in the district and said, you know, what do you think? I mean, I'd be out at a restaurant anywhere in the district and I'd say, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And go, here's who I am. Here's why I'm asking you questions. And people, number one, loved it.
Yeah.
Number two, they said, like, we don't get talked to by our state legislators anyway, a lot of them. And so we love that you're thinking about doing this. And then I'd say, what do you find as a need in the district? Do you know your state senator? Nope. Never heard of him. What is important to you? And then, so, you know, that was a big part of my educational process, to find out from the guys and gals out in the district what's really important to them and what their perception is of Montgomery and what Montgomery is not doing for them.
And by the way, do you know how embarrassing it is as a voter to go into the booth?
Oh, yeah.
And normally on presidential elections and have 65 different questions. It's and I don't know what the hell, even amendments. I'm like, and I feel guilty. I feel guilty because I don't know. And they certainly don't describe what the amendments are about or about who the people are. Now, a lot of people are just going to vote along party lines. And I get that. And I've voted both Republican and Democrat. My dad was Republican. He's an Ohio guy. I don't care who's running. We're going Republican. And I have gone back and forth. And I know that drives some people crazy, but I have to look at the issues. I have to do what's best for my family and what's best for me. And you know, it used to be, are we better off 4 years ago than we are now? But it's amazing. All right. We don't have a lot of time left. And I know you're a busy guy. Do you have surgery today?
No. So starting about a month ago, I backed it down to half speed on the practice. I didn't shut my practice down. I have not been working for the past 2 weeks. I'm campaigning.
Okay.
And so again, that's part of this.
But you'll still come over to my house and check me out for free, right?
I will do anything for Tony Curry.
I got a varicoseal. I got the varicoseal there.
Don't look at me. I'm a psychologist.
My left testicle. So, I don't know what the hell that's all about.
One of the things, Josh, you mentioned was about educating yourself. About
yeah.
This. So there's an article that was written that was, you know, from Over the Mountain Journal or one of the journals in from Homewood or Vestavia or Mountain Brook, I forget what it was, where my competitor said, you know, and he's coming to the end of his first term. He said, you know, it takes two terms to really learn how to be a state senator. It takes two terms, 8 years to learn how to be a state senator. So I did residency in urology. Residency was 6 years. In that time, I learned I can take out a kidney from a donor. I can then work with a transplant surgeon, put it in, save a life. I can treat someone with prostate cancer, bladder cancer, literally save their life with surgery. I can take someone who's miserable with a kidney stone, treat that individual. I can take couples who come in with infertility and help them, you know, to have a child by doing things. My residency was 6 years. If I can learn that in 6 years, I can guarantee you that if it takes you 8 years to learn to be a state senator, you are a slow learner and there's something wrong. And I just think talking about learning about things, I mean, there's this mystique.
Yes.
You know, at least, and again, part of this, let's face it, this was very self-serving to say, well, I'm coming to the end of my first term. So it takes two terms to learn to be a senator. No, it doesn't. It doesn't take two terms or 8 years to learn to be a servant of the people.
You've been a servant of the people for a long period of time.
I love that answer because it also speaks.
You're thinking about going Republican, aren't you?
I come from a family of Reagan Republicans. So yeah. No, but I love that answer because it's an honest answer. And what I mean by that is you are smart. You did have to do a lot of education and that education in your residency and whatnot was not people just telling you facts. You are a self-learner and I like the candor to say it doesn't take 8 years to learn how to be a senator. No. Which because that speaks to not just Brian Christine, but I think to some of his larger part, it speaks to Tony Curry who might want to run first center or me.
I've been doing it for 40 years and I'm still learning about radio.
No, I mean, and that doesn't mean we can't learn as we go along, but I mean, to sit there and like you said, it doesn't take 8 years to learn to be a public servant. We want men and women to get involved in this process and to serve.
All right. Can we have a little fun?
We can always have a little fun.
Brian Christine, Alabama State Senate, District 15. He is on the Curry and Klapo show. You can listen to this entire interview. It's going to be over an hour on Spotify. Search Tony Curry Radio. It's fantastic. There's hundreds of shows. We have the Blues Almighty show, which is going to be airing later on tonight and today at noon and 8. The Damon Johnson show, Mission Minded, Dark Side of the Pooch, Adapt the Gent with Dr. Josh Klapo and Dr. Alex. We get a lot of doctors who come into the show. I don't know what's going on. It makes me look smart being surrounded with like Dr. Johnny Fever. All right, so NewsWhip, which is a monitoring service that monitors all news organizations and social media posts, and they see how often there are social interactions per published articles. and we're finding out what people in this country right now are really into. So I want to throw a couple of, well, the top six or seven things.
Okay.
And I want you to give me a brief synopsis of what you believe in those particular things. At 44, COVID-19, your thoughts on COVID-19?
COVID-19. So obviously COVID is a real disease. It's a real virus. It's a deadly disease to some people. The part that's been so frustrating about it is that it's been so politicized. It was so politicized from both the right and the left politicized. We know that there are people who are going, who died from COVID-19. We also know there are many more people who really were not going to be at serious health risk. And if we had handled this in a different way and not politicized it and not tried to, you know, in my opinion, educate people as to what the health issues are, really take steps to protect those who were most at risk, the elderly or the obese and that kind of thing, not try to make these political statements and not try to exert what I would consider to be undue overreach of power with mandates and such, I think that was a problem. This could have been handled completely differently and we could have done a better job and we could have had much less harm on our economy and small business and such, but yet still done the right thing for our people.
The sixth most common search and the most sociably interactive topic was inflation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, what's happening in your pocketbook is really, really important. I mean, there are good men and women in this state, for instance, who are really struggling to do the very best they can. I am a low tax, smaller government kind of guy because I'm very conservative. That doesn't mean you can't have no taxes because you have to have your society function and the state function. I'm a low tax guy. People are really struggling now. Something I am very passionate about is repealing our grocery tax in this state. You know, I think that people like me or those that's sitting at the table here, you know, we can pay our grocery tax and we're okay. But there are a lot of men and women on this state on fixed incomes working, doing the very best they can, that the grocery tax is a real burden. We need to repeal the grocery tax. I was knocking doors the other day. I met a woman whose mother had just moved from Florida. Florida does not have a grocery tax. Her mother is on a fixed income, a very tight budget. The grocery tax is a big deal to her. So, yes, inflation, the economy, tremendously important. Let's do something about it in the state. And this is something, Josh, where I think I don't care what your political stripe is. Mm-hmm. You could say we can work together to repeal this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Why has the legislature not done it? Because they're busy spending all kind of time talking about things that really don't matter.
The Russian-Ukrainian war. What's your thoughts on that? It's been going on since, February 24th. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think, you know, when you look, and again, how much does this impact Alabama? Of course, there is some impact to it, and there's some involvement. But you look at this, you've got a big bully like Russia. I look back, and as this was all unfolding, it really made me think about back in the 30s with Adolf Hitler, you know, pushing and pushing and exerting influence and no one being willing and people aren't being willing to stand up to him. And I saw there were some parallels. I mean, you can't have someone who is going to simply exert force on their smaller, more vulnerable neighbors because they can exert force.
There you go.
I think it's a problem. I mean, again, it's obviously a crisis in that part of the world. You know, now do we need to start sending troops, boots on the ground? Completely different discussion there.
Roe versus Wade and abortion.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because people are like, oh, we shouldn't talk about that. You know, I've had interviewers say, we're not going to talk. We have to talk about it. So I think, and I'm glad you asked it. So I think that Roe versus Wade, I think that decision was a bad decision because I don't.
The initial Roe versus Wade?
RV Wade. I think it was a bad decision because I think there was not. I don't think there is a constitutional right to abortion to be found in the Constitution. Okay, just because it's that decision has been around for 50 years doesn't mean it's sacrosanct. We think about the whole Dred Scott decision, right? That talked about basically slaves continuing to be slaves. I mean, that was somewhere where the court reversed itself. I think kicking this back to the people is a very good exercise in democracy. Obviously, not everybody believes about that. So I think Roe versus Wade was poorly decided. I think it should go to the people. Looks like it'll probably be possibly kicked back to the states. I think that's not bad. I think it's a good thing. Now, I am a pro-life candidate. I believe that life is sacred. I believe
in every sense.
In defending life at all stages. So that means to me, what I think is really important is, do I stand for the unborn? Yes. But here's what happens. Sometimes there are people who are pro-life, but in fact, they seem to be more pro-birth. In other words, they like to argue about abortion, but then what do they do to support these new mothers and their children afterwards? And they don't want to think about that. So if we are going to, if Roe versus Wade is overturned, and let's say in Alabama, we enact laws, you know, we have laws that are very restrictive on abortion. What does that mean we need to do if we have these women who would have had an abortion who didn't? Now, what are we going to do to support these women, to support these families, to support these newborn children? I think it would be incredible hypocrisy to not have that. If we really are going to have to function in a post-Roe world, what does that mean? I think that means that we have to motivate the private and the public sector to say, what do we do for these women? If we want these women, if these women have children and we want to support them, let's help provide for them childcare, affordable. Let's provide for them education, job training, skills. Let's support them and their children for success and to be integrated into society. So it's not only about saying we don't like abortion. It's about saying, okay, I get that because that's my feeling as well. But what are we going to do to truly be pro-life, which is to support these women, support these families, support these children? And when I say support, I mean help motivate again. I'm a big fan of the private sector doing things because I think we do it. I think private sector does it better than government. Mm-hmm. How are we going to help these women, help these children to be integrated? I mean, to be an important, functioning, successful part of society. You can't forget about kids once they are born. You can't. That's wrong. And you can't not have good health care for the elderly and the infirm. To me, providing and having access to good health care is being pro-life. I think that's part of that. Now, and this is something where Josh and I probably disagree a lot fundamentally. I don't know. We've never talked about this issue. But at least I think we can agree and say, listen, If we're gonna change this landscape, we better be ready as conservatives. We better be ready to help out and to do everything we can to make these kids, to make these mothers, to support them, to have them be successful, to give them opportunities. And I'm a big fan of having the private sector step in.
The third most socially interactive topic, Joe Biden.
Joe Biden. So I did not vote for Joe Biden. I think he's been a disaster as president. I really think he has been a disaster as a president. He's not been a good president. I don't know. People talk about his cognition. I think Joe Biden has real cognitive issues. I'm not a psychologist, psychiatrist. I think he does. I don't think he's been a very good president.
Do you give him any pass at all, the fact that he got into just a hot hell mess when he took office? I mean, we were COVID was flaming up. We didn't know the Ukrainian war was going to happen. All that was cropping up. There's been so many bad things. I try to be somewhat compassionate and understanding, and I know that things could have been done differently. But do you give him any sympathy in those areas?
Well, I don't give him a pass, that's for sure. Yeah. When you say sympathy, I mean, he's a human being, so I respect that. Obviously, like we talk about respect life, I respect that. Politically, his values don't line up with mine.
He's a Catholic, you know.
He is a Catholic, but I think...
He hedges a little bit, does he?
He does. I mean, he is a Catholic. Nancy Pelosi is a Catholic. To me, in my mind, they're not the kind of Catholic that let me see how I say this, because they are Catholic. But they don't seem to embrace the values that I do. I would say the kind of Catholic that I consider myself more is like the Antonin Scalia Catholic or the Clarence Thomas Catholic or Pope John Paul II Catholic. That's kind of how I line up things.
All right. And this is something we could do an entire show on, but the right to free speech, Elon Musk. What's your thought on the whole Twitter thing? We certainly saw a horrible thing happen in Buffalo about seven or eight days ago from a racist standpoint. And if you read some of his manifesto and some of the hate speech he did, and we do have the right to say whatever we want, doesn't mean there's not going to be ramifications for it. But as far as in social media aspects to free speech, what's your thoughts?
No, I think if you're going to have a social media platform, I think you should be able to say what you want to say. I do. I mean, I don't think you should have filters on those kind of things. I think
so. Anything goes.
Well, I think if you're really going to be free speech, then yeah, I think anything should be able to go. Now, I think that if someone tweets out, I intend to take a gun and I intend to shoot Joe Biden because I hate him, we better be all over that and look at that.
Well, we have that in our professions.
Well, right? Yeah.
Imminent threat. I mean, and we need to be in a position if there's an imminent threat. So you would support whatever algorithms that would sort of pick up on potential
it's
threats.
Really, I tell you, Josh, that's to me, that is an incredibly slippery slope.
I agree.
Because what is hate speech to one person or dangerous to one is not to someone else. And so I really don't like speech being fettered. Okay. I don't like it being constrained. I think it just needs to be out there. So, I mean, honestly, if someone wants to post up and put out there on a tweet or post up on Facebook that I think that 9/11 was all engineered by the Bush administration, and you know, I think this was all an inside job, and that, fine, let him put it up there, whatever. Okay. And then people can judge.
By the way, Dr. Josh and myself, Tony Curry, will be live on Fox 6 here in just about 20 minutes. We'll be talking some more election. We're doing House Divided.
House Divided.
You got a Republican Democrat in the same house. What do you do? We'll talk about that coming up in a few minutes.
That's a great subject.
Dr. Brian Christine joins us here, Alabama State Senate District 15. He's up as a candidate. Finally, the most important thing that everyone in the world is talking about. You know what it is? By far, it's not even close.
What?
The Heard Depp trial. Your thoughts? Amber Heard, Johnny Depp, they've been getting after each other, beating each other up.
I have paid no attention to the Heard Depp trial.
Oh, you need to get into it.
That's juicy. Really interesting because neither have I.
I paid no attention to it. I don't really care. That's their business. It's not mine. You know, again, obviously I've been focused on this campaign, but I mean, I don't think if I wasn't campaigning, I don't really care. There are far too many things that are more important going on in our
Which should tell us a lot about what we're into in this country, because I mean, it's not even close. People are really into this salacious crap, and it sounds like they just beat the hell out of each other. They're perfect for each other. I'm hoping the judge just throws it out and says, you both just stay away from each other and get out of here.
No, I have not paid attention. Again, I've been focused on...
Although Johnny Depp's attorney is smoking hot.
There you Again, go. I have...
Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
See how educational it is to come on Tony Curry Radio?
Oh, I'm telling you, Curry Flappo, this is the best thing ever. So how much more time we got? What, like 30 seconds or something?
Yeah.
I'm going to let you say the last final words here on the Curry and Flappo show. Go ahead and start stomping. Yeah. By the way... I seen your commercial. I was at Vulcan when you made your announcement.
Yeah.
Who came up with the riding the horse, riding it hard, riding it heavy? You know, we're going through a triple crown thing right now. It made me snicker a little bit because I know who you are as a urologist, and I thought it was perfect. But was that something you thought of?
It was, and I'll tell you why I thought about that. So what Tony's referring to is in our campaign kickoff event back at the end of January, which was huge, which was tremendously successful at Vulcan Park. I said to people, I said that we are kicking off our campaign tonight. You know, we are going to ride, you know, mount up and ride with me. We're going to ride hard. We're going to ride fast. And we're not going to stop until we get to Montgomery. People love that. And the reason I said it was this, I think my father was in the military. My dad was, he's the son of immigrants from Italy. My grandparents came between World War I, World War II, because they saw democracy being destroyed, the rise of Mussolini and the fascists, and they came to America for a better life. My father, their son, my father was first generation Italian American. He went on, his career was in the military. So he was, I was actually born in what used to be West Germany because my dad was in armor. He was a tank. Okay. And at that time, 63, the Cold War was very cold, and we had a lot of armored, you know, brigades and divisions in the east-west border in Germany. So I was born in Germany. Ultimately, he became a Green Beret officer, and he was injured on his second tour of Vietnam. He lost an arm and a leg. But one of the things my dad always said was he told his kids, when you find your fight, you fight hard. He always said, you ride to the sound of the guns. He said, where there's the fight, what you see the problem is you ride to the fight. You don't backbench. You don't sit on the sidelines. You're in front, and you ride to the sound of the guns. And so to me, that always resonated with me. And so when I was talking about that, I said, you know, we're going to ride to the problems that Alabama has: education, healthcare, you know, making our state better, job opportunities. We're going to ride to the sound of the guns. We're going to mount up, and we're going to ride hard, and we're going to ride fast to the sound of the guns. I mean, what I really want to do is I absolutely, like I said, I'm not doing this for money. I'm not doing this for fame. I'm not doing it to be a career politician. I believe in term limits. What I want to do is I really want to be, honestly, District 15. I want to be the state senator that you want and that you deserve, but you don't have. I want to be something different. I truly hope that you'll vote for me next Tuesday, May 24th. My cell phone number is on the website. Call me and talk to me. I want to have a relationship. If you're happy with how Montgomery is, don't vote for me. But if you're tired of being 49th and 50th, if you want something different, then please vote for me and you'll be happy you did.
Can I leave you on this note? I hope you win. I hope you go super far. And I hope someday you're the president of the United States of America, because I want to say that the president of the United States of America checked my prostate. I think that would be the coolest thing in the history of the world.
You checked mine too.
Yeah, there you go.
And I checked Al Del Greco's too. And so
at the same time.
Al, if you're out there, I know you, brother.
Oh, Doc, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
All right. If you missed any of our interview this morning, we went for about an hour. You can go to Spotify. It should be up here in a couple hours, and search Tony Curry Radio. That's Curry with a K, K-U-R-R-E. And listen to it as many times as you want. Of course, we have over 100 different podcasts on our Spotify platform, and it's killing. It's going great. Of course, listen to Tony Curry Radio. Download the Tony Curry Radio app through Android or Apple. And thanks again to all the folks who joined us this morning here on Facebook. Have yourself a wonderful day, and bless you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.